This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
The Delphi case has taken so many twists, so many turns. It's hard to keep up if you're not watching it the way we are at an obsessive level where you wake up having nightmares about it. But one thing is clear, there are serious questions about how this case was handled from the start, between ignored confessions, missing evidence, and possible conflicts of interest. It seems more and more likely that the wrong man is behind bars, while key players in law enforcement and prosecution continue to dodge transparency. Joining me today, Eric Faddis, seasoned defense attorney. We're going to be talking about this case and exactly where it is all going, breaking down the latest legal bombshells. Eric is someone who's been on both sides of the courtroom. Let's start here. If prosecutors really did suppress evidence of another confession, and we're talking about the alleged confession in jail of Ron Logan to Richie Davis, how big of a deal is legality, and could this be enough to unravel Richard Allen's conviction?
It would be bigger than big, and it would absolutely be enough for an appellate court to review it and grant a new trial. The prosecution is always required to send to the defense not only incriminating evidence, but also evidence that tends to show the defendant is not guilty. That there was a case called Brady versus Maryland in I think the 60s that said if the prosecution does not do that, it is a tremendous violation and oftentimes results in a reversal.
The big thing that we hear the second that this gets brought up from the prosecution and from anybody who thinks that Richard Allen is guilty is he miserably failed and miserably underlined, because that's the term they always use in terms from the investigators about a lie detector that was allegedly conducted on Richie Davis. We don't have any date, time, who conducted it, anything about actually when it would have occurred, or anything about the questions asked. Just, he miserably failed. Move on. Nothing to see here is really kind of how it feels. And again, I mean, those things are not, you know, admissible in court to begin with. But that just seems to be where it was left off. I mean, is this a case of, again, just more blinders? We did look at him. We talked to him. He failed this, and we're just not going to hear him anymore. La, 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 la. What do you think is going on?
You know, I've seen several lie detector test examinations, and those things are not always as valid as you think. And there can be influence exerted by the examiner to have it go one way or the other. And so to use that as a basis to say, oh, yeah, so we didn't believe in it, we ignored it. And oh, yeah, and we also didn't give defense all the information we had. I think that's terribly problematic for the government.
It does seem to be. The thing is, though, they're going to now have to prove, or the defense is going to have to prove, that these communications actually did take place. The allegation is that the inmate, Richie, had sent 7 letters to McClellan, the prosecutor, back in 2017, like going all the way back. This wasn't a, oh, he's on trial, let's try and get a bunch of attention right now. And in those letters, he had information that no one would have known at the time about the box cutter being used. He claims that Ron Allen sat there and literally confessed piece by piece about how this all went down, even making the allegation, and this is just the allegation, we're just reporting it, not saying this is true, that Ron Logan had said to him that, oh, you know, there's some sort of connection here, and I'm just paraphrasing, between the prosecutor and myself, and that he's not going to let me sit in here forever. It's a big claim to make that there's some sort of collusion going on there. And again, not saying that that is true by any stretch of the imagination, but again, big claim to make in a case like this.
Oh, most certainly. And look, if there were those letters sent by this inmate to the prosecutor, and those were not turned over to defense, they were put in a drawer, they were thrown away, some not put into the case, that is such an egregious violation of due process, of a defendant's right to a fair trial. And I just would be blown away. But being that it's a Delphi case, so much weird shit has happened, it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, I mean, this is stuff that would basically, you know, ruin a career if you're found guilty of doing something like this. I have a hard time believing that that Nick McClellan will be putting his you know, career and livelihood on the line for this, you know, for Ron Logan, or for Keegan Klein. I mean, just, it doesn't add up in my mind. The only way it adds up is if there's some reason that somebody's covering for somebody else. I'm not saying that's happening, but again, this thing just keeps looking more and more like something else is going on. Could this be, I'm just trying to exhaust the excuses of what may be brought here, because I'm going to think McClellan's going to have to answer this question, is he not? Of what's going on?
Oh, I think he definitely is. And when we're talking about, you know, letters being mailed, or is there some kind of like trail, some sort of documentary trail that we can look at to say, hey, this letter came out of the jail on this date. It was addressed to the district attorney's office. I mean, that would be pretty significant information. So are there ways to kind of reconstruct or at least gather evidence as to whether these letters were actually sent? There are such ways. Now, it's going to be difficult that it happened in 2017 and a jail institution and everything else.
I mean, they do scan mail going out of a jail, correct? But then you'd also have to, I don't know, I'm not there. One would think you would have records of this. I would think you'd have to hold on to that for a certain amount of time. I don't know what the restrictions are. So I would imagine you'd have to go back there, see A, if these letters existed and if they went out of the system, correct?
I absolutely think so, and I know that some jail institutions in Colorado do that.
Now, that being said, we're talking about the same jail institution that was also, you know, accused of abusing him and locking him in a cage for more than a year and torturing him and all sorts of horrible things. I'd imagine if you don't want these things to be seen, they could go away. They could be not on record.
I would imagine so as well. And, you know, there have been cases where they have, lo and behold, found material evidence central to a case, like in a detective's drawer mm-hmm. or in places where they absolutely shouldn't be.
Yeah.
So are there ways to sort of make this stuff disappear? There are. I'm not saying the prosecutor did that, but yeah. I'm saying it's a question that should be asked.
Yeah, I'm not saying he did it either. I'm just, because there's so many things that have disappeared in this case, it's not like this is a crazy question to ask. Initially, you had hours and hours of interviews with people, persons of interest and such, not necessarily suspects at the time, but I think anybody was up at that moment to possibly be a suspect right after. So they're talking to people, and some of the very people we're talking about, they lost those tapes, or it was taped over, was their excuse. It was taped over on the DVR. It's gone. We don't have it anymore. And by the way, there was nothing on any of those tapes. Nothing to see here. Move along. Don't question us anymore. La, 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 la. Literally what has happened. So it's not far out to say, okay, well, you're being big spotlight over here is on this kind of weird thing that doesn't look right. How can we really trust you to produce this, even if you have it, because it ain't gonna look good?
Yeah, Tony, there has been multiple instances of evidence mismanagement in this case. And, oh, surprise, surprise, it happened to only benefit the government. It's never evidence mismanagement that benefits the defense. And so there is kind of a pattern, a history of that happening in this specific case. And so is it reasonable to say, hey, where are these letters this inmate says he sent to the lead prosecutor on the matter about an alternative suspect confessing to the crimes?
Why would you not look at this to begin with? I guess that's my initial trying to wrap my mind around this, not even to where we are today, because we have to remember there was no Richard Allen at this point in the case. He was not being investigated. Richard Allen at this time, it was raising his hand, going, hey, how can I help? I was over there. No charges, not a person of interest. They didn't have a suspect at that moment in time. And the FBI is looking at this at the same time going, yeah, I think you got this guy over here. This Ron Logan guy looks rather suspicious. The girls are on his property. He made up an alibi before the girls were even found dead. His phone puts him there. They raided his house. We have no idea what they found on the raid because they got kicked out of the investigation by Delphi. So there's a lot of things there. And McClellan, yet when questioned so many times, like, do you have a person of interest, anyone, you know, at all, or once we did get years down the road to having Richard Allen, he's still saying, no, I'm not aware that there's anybody, not aware that anything at all. And you got the letters now, too, to add on top of everything, if they exist, if they're real, which I tend to believe they probably are real. That's a lot of things to ignore and to say that don't exist, that there's no leads here. Granted, yeah, it came from an inmate. That doesn't necessarily mean it's not viable or something to at least take a bit of a look at, other than saying you can only give us two paragraphs of what you want to say, which is what they did.
Oh, of course. And, you know, there are sometimes credibility issues with sometimes people are referred to them as jailhouse snitches. Those things happen. On the other hand, when people are in dire straits in a box in jail, sometimes they confide in folks. Sometimes you're looking for a connection. Sometimes you want to talk about what's going on in your life. You don't have anyone else to talk to. Mm-hmm. And so it's not unusual for people to make credible confessions in jail as well.
Well, and the fact that Rishi was not looking for anything out of this. He's said flat out, hey, I'm not looking to get my sentence reduced. I'm not looking for anything to do with me. I just want to give you this information. Not looking for a payday, nothing. Just here's what, and he's in jail on drug charges. So that also says to me a little bit more about the humanity of the person to a certain extent, as much as you can say about a drug dealer. But he's not a rapist. He's not a child killer. He's not a murderer. He's not a wife beater. He's not so many other things that deal more with interpersonal relationships and someone having the ability to harm another person directly like that. Yes, distributing drugs and meth is going to harm people. But there's a difference in terms of, I guess, how one would emotionally feel about that. That also stood out to me in terms of the type of person that he is. Not saying he's a great guy, but also he's not in there for abusing children or anything like that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and make no mistake, there is kind of a social stratification structure in prison. And there are folks who are more favorable and less favorable. The folks who, you know, have drug crimes and stuff like that for the reasons you mentioned are seen more favorably, as opposed to folks who are, you know, child rapists or mm-hmm. something, who are not to be trusted and likely going to be assaulted. On top of that, the central criticism of a jailhouse informant is that they're saying something to get a benefit for themselves. According to some reports, this Richie Davis was not trying to do that. And so it just lends to the potential credibility of what he said.
He even offered to wear a wire. That to me is another, like, look, I'm not, you know, you don't have to just take my word for it on these letters. I will wear a wire. He's talking to me on a regular basis. I can probably get in there and get you some information. No need for that, Mr. Davis. We're good. We don't need that. Is that just ignorance? Is that just, well, he's an inmate, he's all full of lies. Lies, lies, lies. Or, I mean, what is it?
Yeah, it's it seems bizarre. If a law enforcement officer is genuinely investigating a case, genuinely wants to get to the truth, and you have someone who claims to be a witness saying, hey, I have all this information for you, and on top of that, I will be your pawn. I will wear a wire to get this information to prove to you I'm telling the truth. It would seem very bizarre for a investigator with pure intentions to just ignore that and say, yeah, no, we're good. We kind of, no thanks. That just seems very peculiar.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Extra Value Meals are back. That means 10 tender, juicy McNuggets and medium fries and a drink are just $8. Only at McDonald's.
For limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.